Hello and welcome to the St. Patrick's Day edition of Volunteer Voices, the members-only podcast of the American Association for Museum Volunteers. I am Richard Harker, the Vice President for AAMV, and I am joined by my co-host, Anna Fru, the Manager of Volunteer Services at the Museum in Washington, D.C. How are you doing, Anna?
Good. How are you?
I am really good. Happy St. Patrick's Day.
Same to you.
So if you are listening to us today, then that means you are a member of AAMV, so thank you for your continued support. If you haven't already checked out our new website, make sure you do, because there's loads of members-only content there. We have a brand new newsletter available that has three really, really neat feature articles, and one that I especially like is from Jenny Woods, who is at the Seattle Art Museum, and she's writing about paid internships and how to find money to pay your interns. And I really think it's a neat discussion which is going to help people to maybe rethink how they feel about paying interns. The last piece of news before we jump into today's conversation is that we want to hear your feedback. So please tweet at us at MuseumVols, Museum V-O-L-S, or email us at rharker@kennesaw.edu to let us know what you think of the podcast, what topics you want us to cover, and if there are any great ideas or events that you want us to plug, or if you would like to come and join us as a guest. So with all of that said, let us turn to today's topic.
For today's topic, we're going to be talking to two people from the Koshland Science Museum in Washington, D.C. about their experience working with volunteers. Specifically, we're going to discuss working with volunteers when someone isn't the volunteer manager. Today, we're going to be talking to Nell Champlin, who is the Learning and Engagement Assistant at the Koshland Science Museum. Before relocating to D.C., she lived in Massachusetts, where she worked as a visitor services representative with Heritage Museums and Gardens. While at Heritage, Nell spent the majority of her time working with youth in the museum's outdoor classroom, Hidden Hollow. Nell received her BA in U.S. History from Stonehill College and her MA in Museum Studies from Johns Hopkins University. We're also going to be talking to our colleague, Carrie Stover, who is the Public Programs Manager at the Koshland Science Museum. Prior to joining the museum, she spent 5 years as a research associate at the National Academy of Sciences working on environmental and toxicological studies. In addition to her time at NAS, Carrie has worked to help the public connect with science through museum education positions with the Smithsonian National Zoo and the Smithsonian Early Enrichment Center. Currently, she volunteers as an interpreter at the National Zoo's Amazonia exhibit. Carrie received her BS in Marine Biology from Stockton University and her MA in Museum Studies from Johns Hopkins University. Welcome. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having us.
Absolutely. So first, can you give us an idea about how you currently work with volunteers?
Sure, absolutely. Hi, this is Nell. So I work with volunteers in the museum about 3 or 4 days a week. And whenever we have new volunteers, I train them on our hands-on science exhibits. I give them an overview of how to greet visitors when they come into the museum, and also give them some skills with how to work with students and school groups.
So what does that training look like? Talk us through how you train your average volunteer.
Sure. So it really is different for each volunteer. We do have, I should say to start, a lot of our volunteers are on the younger side. So many of them have finished their undergraduate degrees and are pursuing PhDs or have just recently gotten a PhD. And so within that group, there are some that are experts within different fields of science. So they've just about retrained me on some of the hands-on science activities. But for the most part, I walk them through the different demonstrations. I try to do it as if I were talking to some of our middle school or high school students to make it as relatable as I can. And then it's an opportunity for them to ask questions. Carrie, am I forgetting anything?
No, and I think what's important to know about the Koshland Science Museum is, first of all, we're part of the National Academy of Sciences, and secondly, we are a very small space. We are only about 5,000 square feet of exhibit space, and we have 3 main exhibits as part of what we feature.
So we kind of have an advantage of being so small and not having to manage both a large space and a large volume of volunteers, that we can kind of almost tailor the training to each new volunteer. As Nell mentioned, most of them come in with an exceptional amount of science knowledge. So we're not really teaching them the content so much as teaching them how it relates to the mission of the museum, and how to relate to our average visitor that walks through the door.
So what would you say are the greatest challenges that you find in your work with volunteers?
I think probably the greatest challenge is after you've trained them and they've come for a couple times to the museum and they've worked with people or there's been a couple slow days, is keeping them engaged and making sure that it doesn't slip into this sort of purely social relationship where the volunteers come and they just want to chat with me or with Carrie and they want to stay up at the front of the museum and forget that they're there to really focus on the visitors or the school group.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And again, there are a lot of advantages to being a much smaller space, and then there are some disadvantages, and one of which is what Nell said, and that, you know, we're not always a very busy space, and so it does become a challenge to keep the volunteers engaged and try to find other ways that they can continue their training and continue their learning of the material when they don't have visitors to interact with.
Yeah, and so I feel like I'm constantly looking for new projects on slow days, and I mean, I don't want to have any of them cleaning out a closet with me because that's not why they're here, but it's been a real lesson for me to be planning ahead. So, you know, when it's September and it's that weird time between summer tourists leaving and field trip season taking off, it's coming up with a list of things we can do, whether we're testing new hands-on activities, we're finding mistakes that are in our worksheets that we give to school groups, always looking for a project.
Do you ever have situations where volunteers will just kind of come to you and say, you know, I'm really bored today, do you have something for me, and you don't have anything for them, and you find yourself sort of thinking on your feet?
To be totally honest, I wish that that would happen. It has not. More often than not, when it's quiet, the volunteers will pull out their phone or they'll bring a book and they'll do some reading.
I think, so our volunteers tend to come like the same day of the week or days of the week every week. So I think, you know, through conversations with us and just through their experiences, they kind of understand that our museum has this kind of ebb and flow of visitors. So I think they kind of come to expect it and accept it in a way. And they fortunately, you know, will find ways to, you know, to pass the time if we don't have something specifically for them to do.
And is that ebb and flow something that you talk about with them at the beginning when you're doing your training?
Yes, we do. Yeah, we do give them sort of the heads up that there can be these slow times. And what I do is, if they're comfortable working with kids and they like working with groups, I just move them around on the schedule if they have flexibility so that when they're here, they overlap with when we have exciting things happening in the museum. Because the last thing that I want is for them to feel like their free time should be wasted. And so I guess that's the best compromise that we can come to. But they do get a warning that, yeah, it can be slow, it can be quiet.
Yeah, one of the things I know that I have told people before is that, you know, we are subject to the D.C. tourism cycle. So sometimes they're really busy and sometimes they're not as busy, you know, sort of like anything.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I think another challenge for us is being a small, kind of undiscovered space in some ways, even though the museum opened in 2004. For people to kind of understand that, you know, we're not the Smithsonian. You know, it could be 6 feet of snow on the ground and or 800 degrees outside, and there's still going to be people in the Natural History Museum because that's just the way it is.
and to kind of make sure they understand. And I think it's obvious when they come through the door that, you know, we are not the size of the Smithsonian, and we are even more affected by those fluctuations of people in the city.
Absolutely. So what would you say has been your greatest success story with volunteers?
I think that probably the greatest success story was last summer. So I had actually just finished my master's program, and I felt like I had this abundance of free time. And I came up with this summer hands-on science series that focused on the ocean. And so I researched like 6 or 7 different activities, and then went to the volunteers who I knew like working with kids the most. So I had sort of this great team, and I trained them on all of the different hands-on activities, and they really took a lot of ownership over the activities. And so we did them in July and in August. For us, this is a big number. We had almost 300 people come to the different sessions, and the volunteers seemed to have a great time. So I think that is probably my greatest success story with the volunteers. Carrie?
I wasn't really sure how to answer this question because as a public programs manager, I think, you know, between Nell and I have way less interaction with the volunteers. I'm in the museum a lot less. I'm usually up in my office, unfortunately. My interactions with the volunteers have been getting them to help out for public programs, evening and weekend events. And I think to me what is most impressive about our group of volunteers is we have some folks who don't come and volunteer in the museum on a regular basis, but they are always more than happy to help out with special events, and they're very reliable. Last summer we did an event outside of our museum space over at the National Academy of Sciences building on Constitution Avenue. There is a very large, very engaging statue of Albert Einstein that people like to sit in his lap and take pictures. So around the statue, we had a former Nobel Prize winning astrophysicist from NASA, John Mather, there, talking about his work and engaging people, and I had two really great volunteers that were there to help me manage the crowd and assist with some hands-on physics activities that were going on outside in that space. So just having people that you know you can rely on, even though they don't come on a regularly scheduled basis, is really nice.
Awesome.
Yeah. How do you sort of recruit and vet your volunteers so that you get those folk who you can really trust? What's your process?
So another interesting aspect of us being such kind of a small space, so we are also a very small staff. There's only 5 of us. So interestingly, neither Nell or I are the volunteer coordinator. Another member of our staff who works part-time, he works Saturdays, Sundays, and Mondays at the front desk of the museum, is in charge of doing all the volunteer recruitment. From my understanding, the volunteer announcement is kind of permanently posted both on our website and through other volunteer websites, and that's usually how people come to us. And because we seem to get mostly very educated, science-passionate people, we kind of take pretty much everyone who comes to us. And, I mean, we're not getting a ton of applications, so he's been able to keep kind of a steady set of about 20 to 25 regular volunteers over the last almost 2 years that he's been in that position.
Interesting. Actually, Richard, do you know that the application for volunteers that they have is in the book, the AAMV book?
No kidding.
No kidding.
That's awesome. I love that. Which is a great way to remind people that we have a book, Transforming Museum Volunteers.
That is correct.
So what is one piece of advice that you wish you had been given when you started working with volunteers?
So one of the pieces of advice that I wish that I'd been given when I started working with volunteers was that it's not so much like managing staff. At least in our experience, because these volunteers are young, they're in their early to mid-20s, and many of them have just finished their undergraduate degrees, they're trying to get to the next part in their career. And this volunteering usually is giving them some experience on their resume that they don't otherwise have. And so what I didn't realize going into this was just how much mentoring or guidance the volunteers are looking for. So, for example, just this past year, I've started writing recommendations. I've been reviewing a couple of our volunteers' cover letters, just trying to help them get to the sort of next part in their careers. So that's something that I was not expecting.
Interesting. I think, you bring up a really good point when you have volunteers about that age, of where they are in that stage of life. Absolutely. Carrie, is there anything? Or?
No, again, I think because I don't interact with them really, nearly as much as Nell does, I don't really have an answer for that one.
No worries. And so what are your plans for the volunteer program in the coming month or year or just future in general?
Sure. So the Koshlin Science Museum is in the process of transformation, and we're evolving into a major new program. We can't say too much just yet, but we're in this unique position where we have, like Carrie said, about 25 volunteers that have been exhibit interpreters. And so looking to the future, we have to also transition this core of volunteers to become program volunteers. So maybe not so much focused on stationary exhibits, but finding ways to use them in a more programmatic capacity. And that's tricky. We haven't really started to figure out a plan for that just yet, but because they will represent the audience that we want to continue to work with going forward, so sort of this millennial or lifelong learning group, we really have to find a way to, I think, tap them for ideas and to show that we value what they have to say, and then find a way to retain them as we evolve.
As of right now, the plan is to have a kind of half-day volunteer program in the museum in June. We're going to invite them in, feed them lunch, play one of the museum's interactive role-playing games with them, and then have both the volunteer coordinator and the museum's director kind of tell them about what this evolution at the Koshlin means for them, and let them, you know, kind of have a conversation about it. Because at this point, the volunteers are not aware of any of the changes that are coming up.
And I have one final question, which is, do you all evaluate your volunteers? And if so, sort of how does that work?
No, I don't think that we do, at least not in the 2 years that Carrie and I have been here have we evaluated them. Prior to us being here, there was a gentleman who was the volunteer coordinator for, I want to say, 6 years. He might have had an evaluation process that he used, but I'm not aware of it.
Well, thank you both so much for your time today to talk to us about your role with volunteers, even though you aren't specifically the volunteer manager or coordinator.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah, thank you so much for joining us. And thank everybody for listening to Volunteer Voices. As I said at the beginning, make sure that you check out all of our members-only content at aamv.org. And also, we hope to see everybody in St. Louis for the AAM annual meeting, where we are hosting a networking lunch as well as presenting 3 sessions on volunteer management. So we're really looking forward to that, and I know there's lots of preparation going on behind the scenes to make those sessions as useful as possible to the volunteer management community. But as always, all of that information and information about AAMV is on our website at aamv.org. So until next time, thank you and goodbye.
love.